Also, a popular contrivance whereby lovemaking may be suspended, but not stopped during the picnic season. Harangue. The tiresome product of a tireless tongue. Angor, pain, painful to hear. Hay fever, a heart trouble caused by falling in love with a grass widow. Heaven. A good place to be raised to. Hedge, a fence. Heredity. The cause of all our faults. Horse sense, a degree of wisdom that keeps one from betting on the races. Hose. Matt's excuse for wetting the walk. Hotel. A place where a guest often gives up good dollars for poor quarters. House cleaning. A domestic upheaval that makes it easy for the government to enlist all the soldiers it needs. Husband, the next thing to a wife. Hussy, woman. And bon, tie. Tied to a woman. Hypocrite, a horse dealer. Those pretty wrongs that liberty commits, when I am sometime absent from thy heart, thy beauty and thy years full well befits, for still temptation follows where thou art. I mean, no matter then, although my foot did stand upon the farthest earth removed from thee, for nimble thought can jump both sea and land as soon as think the place where he would be. But, Thought kills me that I am not thought, to leap large lengths of miles when thou art gone, but that so much of earth and water wrought, I must attend time's leisure with my moan, receiving not by elements so slow, but heavy tears, badges of either's woe. My heart doth plead that thou in him dost lie, a closet never pierced with crystal eyes. But the defendant doth that plea deny, and says in him thy fair appearance lies. You are my all the world, and I must strive to know my shames and praises from your tongue, none else to me, nor I to none alive, that my steeled sense or changes right or wrong. Oh, 'tis the first, 'tis flattery in my seeing, and my great mind most kingly drinks it up. Mine eye well knows what with his gust is green, and to his palate doth prepare the cup. If it be poisoned, 'tis the lesser sin that mine eye loves it and doth first begin. But reckoning time, whose millioned accidents creep in twixt vows and change decrees of kings, tan sacred beauty, blunt the sharpest intents, divert strong minds to the course of altering things. Alas, why fearing of time's tyranny, might I not then say, now I love you best, when I was certain or in certainty, crowning the present, doubting of the rest? Love is a babe, then might I not say so, to give full growth to that which still doth grow? So I return rebuked to my content, and gain by ill thrice more than I have spent. It was this observation that drew from Douglas, not immediately, but later in the evening, a reply that had the interesting consequence to which I call attention. Someone else told a story not particularly effective, which I saw he was not following. Cried one of the women. He took no notice of her. He looked at me, but as if, instead of me, he saw what he spoke of. There was a unanimous groan at this, and much reproach, after which, in his preoccupied way, he explained, the story's written. I could write to my man and enclose the key. He could send down the packet as he finds it. The others resented postponement, but it was just his scruples that charmed me. To this, his answer was prompt. Oh, thank God, no. And is the record yours? He hung fire again. A woman's. She has been dead these 20 years. She sent me the pages in question before she died. She was the most agreeable woman I've ever known in her position. She would have been worthy of any whatever. It wasn't simply that she said so, but that I knew she hadn't. I was sure. I could see. You'll easily judge why when you hear. Because the thing had been such a scare? He continued to fix me. You are acute. He quitted the fire and dropped back into his chair. Probably not till the second post. It was almost the tone of hope. Everybody will stay. Cried the ladies, whose departure had been fixed. Mrs. Griffin, however, expressed the need for a little more light. Who was it she was in love with? The story will tell, I took upon myself to reply. Oh, I can't wait for the story. The story won't tell, said Douglas. Not in any literal, vulgar way. More's the pity, then. Won't you tell, Douglas? Well, if I don't know who she was in love with, I know who he was. Let me say here distinctly to have done with it that this narrative, from an exact transcript of my own made much later, is what I shall presently give. Poor Douglas, before his death, when it was in sight, committed to me the manuscript that reached him on the third of these days, and that, on the same spot, with immense effect, he began to read to our hushed little circle on the night of the fourth. The departing ladies who had said they would stay didn't, of course, thank heaven, stay. They departed in consequence of arrangements made. In a rage of curiosity, as they professed, produced by the touches with which he had already worked us up. The first of these touches conveyed that the written statement took up the tale at a point after it had, in a manner, begun. He had for his own town residence a big house filled with the spoils of travel and the trophies of the chase. But it was to his country home, an old family place in Essex, that he wished her immediately to proceed. The awkward thing was that they had practically no other relations, and that his own affairs took up all his time. There were plenty of people to help, but of course the young lady who should go down as governess would be in supreme authority. I don't anticipate. She was young, untried, nervous. It was a vision of serious duties and little company, of really great loneliness. Yes, but that's just the beauty of her passion. It was the beauty of it. It sounded dull, it sounded strange, and all the more so because of his main condition. Which was, she promised to do this, and she mentioned to me that when for a moment, disburdened, delighted, he held her hand, thanking her for the sacrifice, she already felt rewarded. But was that all her reward? One of the ladies asked.
Here she would stay, comforted and soothed among the lovely plants and rich exotics, rejoicing the heart of old Turner the gardener, who since Polly's first rapturous entrance had taken her into his good graces for all time. Every chance she could steal after practice hours were over, and after the clamorous demands of the boys upon her time were fully satisfied, was seized to fly on the wings of the wind. To the flowers. Then, dear, said Mrs. Whitney, you must be kinder to her than ever. Think what it would be for one of you to be away from home, even among friends. Somehow, of all the days when the home feeling was the strongest, this day it seemed as if she could bear it no longer. If she could only see Phronsie for just one moment. Oh, she's always at the piano, said Van. She must be there now, somewhere. And then somebody laughed. At this, the bundle opened suddenly, and out popped Phronsie. But Polly couldn't speak, and if Jasper hadn't caught her just in time, she would have tumbled over backward from the stool, Phronsie and all. Asked Phronsie, with her little face close to Polly's own. "Now you'll stay," cried Van. "Say, Polly, won't you?" "Oh, you are the dearest and best Mr. King I ever saw. But how did you make Mammy let her come?" "Isn't he splendid?" cried Jasper, in intense pride, swelling up. "Father knew how to do it." "There, there," he said soothingly, patting her brown, fuzzy head. "I know," gasped Polly, controlling her sobs. "I won't, only I can't thank you." Asked Phronsie, in intense interest, slipping down out of Polly's arms and crowding up close to Jasper's side. "Yes, all alone by himself," asserted Jasper vehemently, and winking furiously to the others to stop their laughing. "He did now, truly, Phronsie." "Oh, no, Japser, I must go by my very own self." "There, Jap, you've caught it," laughed Percy, while the others screamed at the sight of Jasper's face. "Don't mind it, Polly," whispered Jasper. "'Twasn't her fault." "Dear me," ejaculated the old gentleman in the utmost amazement, "and such a time as I've had to get her here, too." "How did her mother ever let her go?" she asked impulsively. "I didn't believe you could persuade her, father." "I didn't have any fears if I worked it rightly," said the old gentleman complacently. He cried in high dudgeon, just as if he owned the whole of the Peppers and could dispose of them all to suit his fancy. and the old gentleman was so delighted with his success that he had to burst out into a series of short, happy bits of laughter that occupied quite a space of time. At last he came out of them and wiped his face vigorously. It is 16 years since John Bergson died. His wife now lies beside him, and the white shaft that marks their graves gleams across the wheat fields. From the Norwegian graveyard, one looks out over a vast checkerboard, marked off in squares of wheat and corn, light and dark, dark and light. From the graveyard gate, one can count a dozen gaily painted farmhouses. The gilded weather vanes on the big red barns wink at each other across the green and brown and yellow fields. The air and the earth are curiously mated and intermingled, as if the one were the breath of the other. He was a splendid figure of a boy, tall and straight as a young pine tree, with a handsome head and stormy gray eyes deeply set under a serious brow. That's not much of a job for an athlete. Here I've been to town and back. Alexandra lets you sleep late. She gathered up her reins. Please wait for me, Marie, Emil coaxed. I never see Luz scythe over here. How brown you've got since you came home. I wish I had an athlete to mow my orchard. I get wet to my knees when I go down to pick cherries. Indeed, he had looked away with the purpose of not seeing it. They think you're proud because you've been away to school or something. There was something individual about the great farm, a most unusual trimness and care for detail. On either side of the road, for a mile before you reached the foot of the hill, stood tall Osage orange hedges, their glossy green marking off the yellow fields. Anyone thereabouts would have told you that this was one of the richest farms on the divide, and that the farmer was a woman, Alexandra Bergson. There is even a white row of beehives in the orchard under the walnut trees. Frank read English slowly, and the more he read about this divorce case, the angrier he grew. Marie sighed. A brisk wind had come up and was driving puffy white clouds across the sky. The orchard was sparkling and rippling in the sun. That invitation decided her. Oh, but I'm glad to get this place mowed. Just smell the wild roses. They are always so spicy after a rain. We never had so many of them in here before. I suppose it's the wet season. Will you have to cut them too? I suppose that's the wet season too, then. It's exciting to see everything growing so fast, and to get the grass cut. Aren't you splashed? Look at the spider webs all over the grass. In a few moments, he heard the cherries dropping smartly into the pail, and he began to swing his scythe with that long, even stroke that few American boys ever learn. Marie picked cherries and sang softly to herself, stripping one glittering branch after another, shivering when she caught a shower of raindrops on her neck and hair. And Emil mowed his way slowly down toward the cherry trees. That summer, the rains had been so many and opportune that it was almost more than Shabbata and his man could do to keep up with the corn. The orchard was a neglected wilderness. I don't know all of them, but I know Linden's are. If I feel that way, I feel that way. He reached up among the branches and began to pick the sweet, insipid fruit. Long, ivory-colored berries, tipped with faint pink, like white coral, that fall to the ground unheeded all summer through. He dropped a handful into her lap. Yes, don't you? Oh, ever so much. Only he seems kind of staid and schoolteachery. When she used to tell me about him, I always wondered whether she wasn't a little in love with him. It would serve you all right if she walked off with Carl. I like to talk to Carl about New York and what a fellow can do there. Oh, Emil. Surely you are not thinking of going off there. Marie's face fell under his brooding gaze. I'm sure Alexandra hopes you will stay on here, she murmured. I don't want to stand around and look on. I want to be doing something on my own account. Sometimes I don't want to do anything at all, and sometimes I want to pull the four corners of the divide together. He threw out his arm and brought it back with a jerk. So, like a tablecloth. I get tired of seeing men and horses going up and down, up and down. I wish you weren't so restless and didn't get so worked up over things, she said sadly. Thank you, he returned shortly. And you never used to be cross to me. I can't play with you like a little boy anymore, he said slowly. That's what you miss, Marie. But, Emil, if I understand, then all our good times are over. We can never do nice things together anymore. And anyhow, there's nothing to understand. That won't last. It will go away, and things will be just as they used to. I pray for you, but that's not the same as if you prayed yourself. I can't pray to have the things I want, he said slowly, and I won't pray not to have them, not if I'm damned. Then all our good times are over.